Ecolab Water for Climate. Less water, more growth. Results will vary. Learn more at ecolab.com/EWC. Ecolab Water for Climate. Transforming the way the world thinks about water.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, September 5th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Right now, artificial intelligence bots can answer questions and help you plan. But what can they actually do for you? In the future, these AI agents will be able to do just about anything you can do on your devices. We'll explain. And then, a wave of states have proposed or passed legislation to regulate social media platforms with the goal of keeping kids safe online. But some app makers and digital safety advocates say smartphone makers and app stores also have a role to play here. Our reporter Jeff Horowitz is going to join us to explain what Apple did to push back on efforts for it to enforce age restrictions. But first, AI agents that book flights, order groceries, even play Cupid without help from people are the next wave of artificial intelligence. Techies see this as the evolution of ChatGPT because it's capable of changing so many aspects of our lives. Here to tell us more about some of these agents and what they are capable of is our reporter, Belle Lin. Belle, when it comes to travel, there are already bots that can help you plan a trip, where to go, what to see, etc. What's the next wave of AI bots going to be able to do?
So Priceline has a bot called Penny, and they call it basically a travel assistant in that it can currently make those reservations, make those bookings for you in addition to helping plan your itinerary. But they're kind of the rare exception in this world of bots and travel right now.
What about some of the other companies like Apple, for example?
Yeah, Apple is a really interesting player in this space because with their Siri voice assistant, they were kind of one of the first out of the gate, along with the other tech giants, to come out with these voice assistants that promise to do a lot of the things that AI bots or agents are now soon primed to do. But the next evolution is that Siri can take all of the personal data that's sitting on your iPhone, that's sitting on your MacBook, and know when your calendar shows that you're available, where you've traveled before based on your text messages with your friends, and put together that itinerary for you, along with many other things in your personal life, such as texting photos from your recent picnic to your mom, because it's aware of and learning from all the data on your devices.
So are we heading towards a future where different kinds of bots will be communicating with each other?
The current theory in the way that these bots will interact is that there could be millions of bots at some very near-term point in the future, because it's likely that you'll have this sort of micro-bot to do one small thing, like browsing the internet for your next outfit for a friend's wedding, and then another bot that will actually do the purchasing, and another bot that's actually connecting to the retailer's API or the retailer's technology connection on the other end. And so it's very possible that in order for this bot world to actually exist, that they need to be virtually connecting or interacting with other bots.
When it comes to financial guidance, a lot of people are already relying on technology, but you're reporting that these AI bots will be even better at this. How so?
What's really ripe for AI is collecting all that data right now to better inform the financial advisor's decision. What's coming in the near-term future is that AI takes the combination of the real-time data as well as the learning from the client's portfolio to actually automate that decision-making. So the kind of role of the investment advisor becomes to kind of oversee the decisions or the advisement of the AI bot.
And are there risks to doing that, though?
Oh, absolutely. The risks abound here. And that's one of the reasons why the technology hasn't quite become mainstream when they have access to our bank accounts, to sensitive information. And so right now, developers are thinking about building in these safeguards so that maybe you have another layer of verification where humans are in the loop and providing the final go ahead to say, yes, I do want to make this purchase. I want to make this investment decision.
What about an aspect that's maybe a little less risky, a little more fun, something like setting up a date?
One of the things that Grindr, which is primarily known as a app for connecting gay men, one of the things they're doing is coming out with an AI wingman. And so this is their version of a bot that can basically do all the things that users currently do on Grindr, but do so in a way that is kind of like your personal assistant. And so if you've got hundreds of favorites or matches or chats and conversations, the wingman can do something like notate all of those chats and conversations so you can more quickly go to your favorite match in a certain place or a certain city. And then beyond that, the wingman can also recommend a great coffee shop for your next date based on a certain location that you want to go to in a certain time.
That was our reporter, Belle Lynn. Coming up, why app makers Match Group and Meta want Apple and Google to take on a role in verifying smartphone users' ages. That's after the break. Should regulation of teen social media use happen entirely within apps? Or do smartphone makers and app stores also have a role to play? That's a question that tech companies and lawmakers are grappling with. A number of legislatures in different states are looking to introduce bills that would require app stores to verify the age of users. And Apple is gearing up for a battle with app makers and legislators over the issue. Our reporter Jeff Horowitz is here to tell us more. So, Jeff, right now it's up to the app makers to figure out how to verify a user's age, but there is a push to get smartphone makers and app stores to do it instead. What's the general argument for that?
So, to set the stage here, a lot of this comes out of people being angry with social media companies and some fairly well-documented lapses on child safety, as well as concerns that these products were simply not engineered with children in mind. And so a lot of states have passed laws requiring age limits and requiring social media platforms to do more to police that. The problem is that it's really hard to ID a 13-year-old. The push has been here from some parties and certainly from some child safety advocates, as well as from social media apps, has been to enhance parental controls to some degree so that the person who buys a phone and sets it up would be able to input an age date for the person who's going to be using it. So basically, parents buying their kids a phone would be able to say, this kid's 11. They've got an iPhone, but they're 11. And thus, certain portions of the internet would be closed off to them from that device.
What do app makers say about this?
App makers are pretty upset that they haven't gotten cooperation on this from Google and Apple. And they've been pushing this for a while in a fairly public fashion. Match Group, which runs Tinder and a whole bunch of other dating apps, declared its frustration that it can't get help in its goal of trying to keep 16-year-olds out of the adult dating pool. The interesting thing has been on the other side, Apple and Google have been very, very quiet on this point.
Okay, but now they're getting dragged into it. I want to take us to Louisiana, which was one of the first U.S. states attempting to make Apple enforce age restrictions. A lawmaker named Kim Carver crafted child safety legislation. What's the focus of that bill, and how did he come up with it?
It's very similar in sort of broad outlines to some of the other child safety bills that have been brought up in places like Utah and Arkansas and Louisiana. A big portion of it is, you know, social media apps are not supposed to be collecting data on minors and not supposed to be basically doing targeted, personalized content for them. That said, in the course of talking with all parties involved and sort of all stakeholders, this freshman representative, Kim Carver, spoke with Meta, and Meta didn't like the bill, but said, look, if you're going to be asking us to be doing more things with keeping kids off the platform, we could use some help from the App Store. Carver considered this. He was consulting on this bill with a group of high school students, ran the idea by them. They were in favor as well. And so amended the legislation to include app stores. And Apple was very not happy about this.
So what did Apple say and do in response to having app stores added to this bill?
So they have said that this would be a grievous privacy violation because they just simply don't share information about a user with an app. Apple hired a whole bunch of lobbyists down there when this amendment was made with the goal of trying to kill this particular proposal and get Louisiana back on track with the other states that had just targeted social media, not device manufacturers or app stores.
The bill was popular with lawmakers, and it passed the Louisiana House unanimously. But before it could get to the state Senate, it had to go through a key committee. Can you tell us what happened there?
According to Representative Carver, he spoke with the head of the committee, who strongly suggested that if the bill's best chance would be if the App Store language was removed. He grudgingly agreed to do that. He didn't want to lose the entire bill over this one provision. Apple was also telling people that the bill, if it passed in its amended form, was going to result in years of litigation. They didn't specify from whom.
Has Apple said anything specifically about the committee hearing and the removal of the App Store provision?
Apple has said that it always behaves ethically and its lobbying is not underhanded. It's noted that Meta also hired lobbyists in Louisiana related to this subject matter.
That was our reporter, Jeff Horowitz. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Zoe Culkin with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.